Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You're listening to Total EM. This is podcast number 32, and we are back this week to talk again about something that I feel like we've been talking about a lot recently, and that is all about CTs. This time, instead of talking about the pros or cons of contrast and whether or not there may actually be an effect there, we're going to talk about the after effects, the concerns for contrast-induced nephropathy. Now, you know, before we've talked about post-contrast AKI is probably the more appropriate term, meaning post-contrast acute kidney injury versus contrast-induced nephropathy. And again, we'll talk about that more here in a second. But what we want to talk about today is whether or not that prophylactic hydration that gets talked about all the time is actually that beneficial. So today we're going to talk about a new paper that just came out. And we're going to talk about this paper about every little detail we can come across and what we think is important for what this paper is truly trying to tell us. So before we get too far into this, let's go ahead and let's talk about the actual title. Today's paper is titled Prophylactic Hydration to Protect Renal Function from Intravascular Iodinated Contrast Material in Patients at High Risk of Contrast-Induced Nephropathy, the AMACING Trial, a prospective, randomized, phase 3, controlled, open-labeled, non-inferiority trial. Now, a lot of fancy words there. We're going to talk about this more here in a second, but like we usually do, let's go over a case first. So a 52-year-old male with a history significant for chronic kidney disease and insulin-dependent diabetes mellitus comes to your emergency department complaining of chest pain you suspect is from a new-onset pulmonary embolism. Per hospital protocol, you obtain the routine labs, which includes getting an estimated glomerular filtration rate prior to ordering the CT with IV contrast. When the eGFR returns, it is 48, and you remember from previous studies that such a value is not considered to be an independent risk factor for post-contrast acute kidney injury, or PCAKI. He does not appear to need fluid resuscitation, and after ordering the CT tech calls you to ask if you plan to give the patient IV fluid hydration prophylactically to protect renal function. Now let's go through some of the background of the research that is currently out there. Recent literature has been dismantling many of the arguments, as we just mentioned above, related to concerns of PCAKI and even if contrast-induced nephropathy is a real concern in the modern age of CT imaging. We have talked about this before in the past, and you can also find that in the previous podcast and in the show notes. There are current practice guidelines that support the use of intravenous normal saline to prevent PCAKI and CIN. Given the lack of effective treatment for these conditions, prevention is the key. However, debate has developed on if this is a cost-effective, or more importantly, a clinically effective means of treatment. Despite being widely recommended in guidelines, no randomized trial has prospectively compared periprocedural intravenous hydration with normal saline with a group receiving no prophylactic hydration in a high-risk population, which is usually what's being targeted in the guidelines. Now, IV fluid hydration is not without its risk. It can lead to symptomatic heart failure due to volume overload. It can lead to pulmonary edema, electrolyte abnormalities such as hyponatremia or hypernatremia, and even arrhythmias, all of which were basically monitored in this study. Another risk with this process is that this could lead to hospitalization of the patients to fulfill the IV fluid protocol, which exposes patients to risks such as hospital-acquired infections. So what's the clinical question? Is not giving prophylactic hydration non-inferior to standard care prophylactic hydration in regards to the rate of CIN? Now remember, non-inferior does not mean that it is superior, it just means that it is not a worse treatment. And we can talk about this a little bit more later. Now it's time to go over our PICO. The population involved patients aged 18 years and older that were referred for an elective procedure requiring intravascular iodinated contrast material at Maastricht University Medical Center with a known GFR lower than 60. Now, those patients were screened, and then they were eligible for inclusion if they had an eGFR between 45 and 59 combined with either diabetes or at least two predefined risk factors. Those include age over 75 years, anemia with a specific hematocrit that's included in the show notes, NSAID or diuretic use. A patient may also be eligible if they had an eGFR between 30 and 45, multiple myeloma, or lymphoplasmacytic lymphoma with small chain proteinuria. These criteria corresponded to the criteria for identifying high-risk patients according to guidelines in Europe and the Netherlands, where the study was done. The authors calculated eGFR with serum creatinine concentrations in the modification of diet and renal disease MDRD study equation. Now, certain patients were excluded. The exclusion criteria included patients unable to provide informed consent, an eGFR that was lower than 30, an important one to keep in mind, renal replacement therapy, emergency procedures, intensive care patients, known inability to plan primary endpoint data collection, no referral for prophylactic hydration, participation in another randomized trial, and the requirement for isolation, basically infection control. The intervention was no hydration prophylaxis. The comparison was the standard hydration prophylaxis. The outcome was the rate of CIN, contrast-induced nephropathy, in 2 to 6 days after contrast exposure. Now let's talk about the author's conclusions. No prophylaxis was found to be non-inferior and cost-saving in preventing contrast-induced nephropathy, CIN, compared with intravenous hydration according to current clinical practice guidelines. Now we have this big quality checklist for randomized control trials, and we're going to go over it here. 1. The study population included or focused on those in the ED. We're unsure because it does not specifically mention it in the study. 2. The patients were adequately randomized. Yes. 3. The randomization process was concealed. No, essentially this was impossible by the design of the study. 4. The patients were analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized. Yes. 5. The study patients were recruited consecutively, i.e. no selection bias. Yes. 6. The patients in both groups were similar with respect to prognostic factors. Yes. 7. All participants, patients, clinicians, outcome assessors, were unaware of group allocation. No, again, essentially impossible by design. 8. All groups were treated equally except for the intervention. Yes. 9. A follow-up was complete, i.e. at least 80% for both groups. Yes for the primary endpoint, and we'll discuss this a little more in a moment. 10. All patient-important outcomes were considered. Yes. And 11. The treatment effect was large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant. Yes, but there are some finer details that we will also discuss here in a moment. So what were the key results? The mean 2 to 6 day change in serum creatinine was 0.31 millimoles per liter in the prophylactic hydration group with a standard deviation of 13.79 and 1.30 millimoles per liter in the group without prophylactic hydration, a standard deviation of 15.09 and a p-value of 0.4049. An increase of more than 25% or 45 millimole per liter increase in serum creatinine from baseline was the definition for CIN, and it was recorded in 8, or 2.7%, of the 296 patients in the prophylactic hydration group, and also 8, or 2.6%, of 307 patients in the group without prophylactic hydration. The absolute difference in proportions with contrast-induced nephropathy, no hydration versus hydration, was negative 0.10%. A one-sided 95% confidence interval of negative 2.26 to 2.06, and a one-tailed p equaling 0.4710. The upper limit was below 2.1%, which excludes a difference in favor for the hydration group of more than 2.1%. All right, so now the fun part. We're going to talk about some key points of debate. Now, this one is a huge one for me. Not all PCAKI is CIN. This is an important first point to cover, as the wording may be confusing when you read PCAKI and CIN. There's a lot to discuss here, and basically we've gone over this before, but to summarize, the rates of CIN listed here are not necessarily accurate and are reflecting more of PCAKI. This is an important technical difference by definition, but not necessarily for what the study was trying to demonstrate. However, for clarification, PCAKI is basically an associative diagnosis. As has been demonstrated in previous studies, AKI is similar in groups both having received contrast or no contrast after having a CT, and even those who were hospitalized with no CT. contrast-induced nephropathy is a much harder thing to prove because it is a causative versus a correlative diagnosis that we see with PCAKI. So again, PCAKI is correlative, whereas CIN is causative. Also, keep in mind that their definition is slightly different in regards to their lab values compared to the commonly accepted numbers. They used an increase in serum creatinine by more than 25% or 44 millimoles per liter in 2 to 6 days versus the widely accepted 48 to 72 hours. Keep in mind, this is for more reasonable outpatient follow-up in that although serum creatinine rises within 48 hours, it peaks in 4 to 5 days post-contrast on average. And now on to our next point. While this study did not focus on patients in the ED, it is still very important for us to know this study. Think about how this affects department flow. Patients may have to wait to have their fluid hydration both before and after they receive their CT scan, with contrast leading to more congestion in the department. Keep in mind, we fluid resuscitate many patients, but that is not the same as the extensive protocols that can require 3 to 4 milliliters per kilogram per hour of normal saline for 4 hours before and 4 hours after, or even what they call the long protocol, which can be 1 ml per kilogram per hour for 12 hours before and 12 hours after the patient gets the CT with contrast. Now on to our next point. Although the process could not conceal randomization, it does not necessarily make this a flawed study. Researchers masked whatever areas they could and randomly assigned patients by stratifying them by diabetes, yes or no, EGFR over or under 45, contrast route IV versus intra-arterial, and procedure type, diagnostic or interventional. Treating physicians were not masked, but were not specifically informed on the treatment allocation. It would be essentially impossible to blind patients or nursing staff due to the obvious differences in treatment. Oddly though, research staff does not appear to have been blinded in the study. It is not fully determined if this is not only for the staff who were at the bedside, or if this extends to those recording and analyzing the data. Potentially could be masked in the process if they were. Our next point, though, was that there was great follow-up at the 2 to 6 day mark, but it was under the desired 80% at the 26 to 35 day time frame. This has some potential limitations of the study, especially if talking about longer-term adverse events. Of the 328 patients allocated to the prophylactic hydration group, there were 32 that were lost to follow-up, basically 296 out of 328 being 90.2% at 2 to 6 days, but there were 68 that were lost at the 26-35-day post-contrast exposure, which means that there was a follow-up of 79.3%. There were 332 patients allocated to the no prophylaxis group, and 25 were lost at the 2 to 6 day follow-up, which means 307 out of 332 is 92.5%. And then there were 72 in total at the 26 to 35 day post-contrast exposure group, leading to a percentage of 78.3%. Having less than 80% follow-up at 26 to 35 days post-contrast exposure is less than ideal for longer-term studies and measurements. The next point I want to bring up is the initial numbers that were the goal for the study could not be achieved, which led to a change during the trial. This does have some concerns regarding the power of this study, but the authors report their sample size was based on what their literature search reported to be the expected proportion of patients with CIN after prophylactic hydration, which was a rate of 2.4%. Their plan was to include 1,300 patients in a 2-year period to detect an absolute difference of more than 2.1% as their non-inferiority margin with 80% power in a one-sided alpha of 5%. However, they revised their calculation due to feasibility of the study in consultation with their research ethics committee and considered 600 patients more feasible. Assuming 10% of patients would not have a baseline serum creatinine, it was decided to recruit 660 patients for randomization, which was also the actual number they obtained. It is worth noting this decision was made in December of 2015, and the trial started on June 17, 2014, and concluded July 17, 2016. So basically, this was in the closing months of this trial that the decision was made. All right, so our final point is that This study is a reminder as to the risk of fluid hydration when it is not necessary. In this study, there were 18 clinically significant adverse events for the prophylaxis group and none in the group without prophylactic hydration. The largest group was 13 patients, or 4%, who experienced complications leading to hydration being stopped prematurely, forced diuresis, or extended hospitalization. One patient in the prophylaxis group developed hyponatremia. However, none had experienced hypernatremia. There were an additional 4 patients who had developed an arrhythmia during the hydration treatment. So let's go ahead and we're going to compare our conclusions. This study has many implications and may further shed light on how we could be managing patients with the more modern contrast media we have today. While many patients in the emergency department may still need IV fluid hydration for other reasons, such as the severity of their illness and needing fluid resuscitation, this study is still important because of how it can improve department flow and avoid admissions that may not otherwise be necessary. All right, so what is our bottom line? We agree that this study demonstrates that no hydration prophylaxis is non-inferior to hydration prophylaxis in regards to the rate of CIN, or more accurately, PCAKI. The case resolution? You discuss with the CT tech that you do not believe the patient requires prophylactic IV fluid hydration. You briefly mention this new paper, and the CT tech suggests that this could be also discussed in the future with the staff radiologist, since there is no such protocol currently regarding this evidence. Your patient receives his CT without incident and is found to have a subsegmental PE. After addressing the patient's concerns and the PE, he is discharged. On follow-up, his PCP reports no PCAKI or CIN. All right, so let's talk about the clinical application. The landscape is constantly evolving in the world of radiology, especially in regards to PCAKI and CIN. It is difficult to say if this myth is truly busted, but it does bring about some important points. In hospitals where there is currently a protocol for IV fluid hydration, this may be one of the pieces of evidence to use when you're talking about how this protocol could be changed. For those centers without a protocol, this could further establish practice for the future. Ultimately, this will need to be a team-based decision across multiple specialties, such as nephrology and radiology when applicable, to further investigate and agree upon this plan. Now, what do I tell my patient? Due to some of your risk factors, such as chronic kidney disease and diabetes, you are traditionally considered to be at a higher risk of complications with regards to contrast being given while receiving a CT. However, recent studies have demonstrated otherwise. One such study is that you may not need to receive IV fluids both before and after you receive your CT. IV fluids are not without risk and can lead to serious complications that could lead to an admission. Based on the most recent evidence, we can consider withholding this prophylaxis as it does not appear to compromise your safety. All right, and that is a wrap for this paper. Again, we went through this pretty quickly, and there's a lot to discuss. Hopefully in the future, I'll have maybe our special guest from our previous one, Paul Shunk, or have some other people come on to help discuss this further. Again, we really enjoy your feedback, and the biggest thing that I can ask you to do is if you could just take a few moments of your time, doesn't take long at all, trust me, I do this for most of the podcasts I listen to, go to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. If you feel like we are ready for that 5-star review, I would appreciate it so much. We really could use all the help and all the support we can get. If for some reason you don't feel like we are there yet to get that 5-star review, please let me know. You can email me at thetotallym@gmail.com. You can also contact me through Twitter or Facebook. Either way, we really want your feedback whenever possible. Let us know what studies you enjoyed. Let us know anything else you want us to do. We have plenty of guests that are coming on, and we enjoy all the feedback and having everyone to participate. So please help us any way you can. All right, we hope to talk to everyone again soon. Until then, continue to provide total care everywhere.